Good afternoon and welcome to the fourth weekly briefing on COVID-19 for municipal chief executive officers. My name is Jeff Beckwith. I'm the executive director of the Massachusetts Municipal Association. We're just giving another moment or two for all of the folks who have registered for this to have a chance to log in, and we'll begin our meeting momentarily. So we will begin in just a moment. Thank you all for joining us this afternoon. Again, this is Jeff Beckwith from the Mass Municipal Association. We'll be starting the weekly briefing in just a moment. We are giving everyone an opportunity to log in. Welcome to the fourth weekly COVID-19 briefing by the Lieutenant Governor on behalf of the Baker Public Administration. This is a session for local officials, municipal chief executive officers from all around Massachusetts. Again, I'm Jeff Beckwith, the executive director of the MMA. We are providing the hosting platform for this weekly briefing. We thank you all for joining us. The agenda will be the Lieutenant Governor and key agency officials making brief presentations to all of you. And then we will take as many questions as we have time for. We do note that because of her schedule in transit, the 2 o'clock briefing will be provided by the governor and lieutenant governor to all the citizens of the Commonwealth. The lieutenant governor will need to depart from this briefing at approximately 1:40, but agency officials will remain. We will end this meeting just a little before 2 o'clock so that everyone has an opportunity to see the administration's weekly briefing to the citizens in person. So at this point, I'm very pleased to turn this meeting over to Lieutenant Governor of the Commonwealth, Karen Pulido, who has been providing extraordinary leadership for local officials and everyone in all of our 351 cities and towns. Lieutenant Governor, thank you for doing this briefing.
Thank you, Jeff, and to your team at MMA and to all the municipal leaders throughout the Commonwealth. You wake up every day, you're focused 100% on this, and at the same time, obviously making the wheels of government turn. But I know this is a primary focus for all of us. So thank you. I'm actually on my way to join Base Cape Cod, where the governor and I will tour the field hospital that is now established there by the Mass Army National Guard to provide additional bed capacity for the South and Cape and Island area of our Commonwealth. Let me just give you a couple of updates. You'll hear from Sean Cronin. We'll get into the details of the municipal bill that was signed by the governor on Friday. And you also have on the call Tom Mangan. He's your liaison or one of them to the COVID Command Center. So the municipal bill signed last Friday, as you may know, gives the commissioner of the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education the ability to modify or waive certain testing requirements, modifies housing program verification, and allows more flexible use of homelessness funding. And it changes the budget for us at the MBTA, so it had some relief for us as well. But Sean will get into more details there. I would like to thank all of you for your assistance through this process on legislation. There will be more areas that we need to cover, and we will look forward to filing what is necessary as we move forward to continue to help municipalities. Obviously, we envision more support and resource given the impact that this pandemic has had on our revenue streams, and not only at the state level, but clearly has an impact at your level as well. The announcements we made recently, MassHealth was very important, putting $800 million into the healthcare provider system. That translated into $400 million to hospitals, $80 million to nursing facilities, $300 million allocated to healthcare providers. That includes funding for ambulance providers, personal care attendants, home health agencies, and I wanted to underscore the ambulance providers. I know that's a really important service provided through the municipalities, and there are some dollars there for them. Testing. Testing has become an integral part of how we are aggressively addressing the spread of the virus. We have the third largest tester in the country, second to California and New York. We've made a lot of progress, and I just want to highlight some expansion opportunities for testing to help your workforce. In Lowell, working in partnership with CVS, we expanded the rapid testing there. It's called Abbott ID Now. It's a test that is available up to 1,000 patients per day, and you can receive your results on site. So that's available to emergency responders, and I wanted you to be aware of that. Big E and Foxborough also online. Available for first responders, healthcare workers, and as of Saturday, grocery store and supermarket workers can be tested there. Mobile testing is available now for 2 weeks. It's been available for our nursing homes, working with the Mass National Guard and the Broad Institute for on-site testing at long-term care facilities. And last week, the program was expanded to include assisted living residences, Department of Developmental Service group homes, including Rentham and Hogan. And since we launched the initiative on March 31st, more than 3,700 on-site tests have been collected at more than 220 facilities. We also have the capability of working with trained clinical staff at certain facilities to be able to conduct their own tests. 35 of these nursing home facilities have ordered testing kits and are doing those on site. The mobile testing hotline and all the guidance associated with this, which was released on April 13th, is 617-366-2350. And there's obvious guidance associated with symptomatic individuals and others working within the nursing homes that need access to testing. Certain executive orders were signed to increase our healthcare capacity. We also had an order bringing nursing students into the front line, obviously under supervision by medical professionals. And we broke down all the lines associated with insurers covering all medically required costs for COVID patients, no matter where they go for their treatment. I mentioned the field hospital that we'll be visiting today. They're also up at Worcester and BCEC in Boston. Many asked about the surge and, you know, where are we now? We are in that period where we anticipate higher incidence of cases, closer to April 20th being the peak time, where our model puts the peak around 2,500 new confirmed cases a day. And it appears that we're sort of on an upward slope to that number. And I wanted to just take a moment to just thank all of you for enforcing our orders around social distancing to help us flatten that curve that appears to be having a sort of a positive impact on the impact that this could have had on our medical hospital provider community. Seems that the bed capacity that we have and we brought online is able to currently address the needs that are coming, as well as non-COVID patients' needs that also we care for through our hospital and our medical infrastructure. Last week, we issued a public health advisory around covering your face in public. So the advisory goes like this, that if you cannot safely socially distance, that covering your face when you are out in public places like supermarkets and pharmacies, and that the face cover should cover both your nose and your mouth to both protect you from others that you may come in contact with, and also to protect others from you if you either, you could, as everyone knows with this virus, be a carrier and be asymptomatic. Grocery guidance, this has been an area with a lot of discussion with all of you, given that you have boards of health having to impose these restrictions with our guidance. As a follow-up to the order that we issued on March 25th, we added further guidance limiting the occupancy to 40% of the maximum permitted within these stores. That includes both employees and the workers, as well as customers. We also provide guidance for lines that form outdoors, waiting to get in. And we've advised the boards of health to minimize the application of specialized rules. Because we are working with our grocers, we're in constant communication with them, as you are. We need to make sure that people can safely access groceries and food and necessities, and that workers within these establishments also feel safe in being able to do their jobs. And we feel that the order and the guidance that we provided should be adopted statewide so that there is consistency, and that additional measures that in some places may be requested can be disruptive to that flow of groceries and necessities to people. So we just ask that boards of health follow this guidance, use your common sense, and try not to go beyond what is outlined, because it could disrupt that flow. I did mention that the added testing sites for grocery workers, that can also be helpful at the Big E in Foxborough. I'm going to leave it at that and just say again, thank you. This week, as you can see, we are 100% focused on the surge and testing and reducing this community spread. But at the same time, we are also analyzing decisions around the May 4th order date for both school essential services. And we will be able to provide you more guidance as we get a little closer, but obviously giving you enough time to adapt. The regional governors also are meeting and collecting their thoughts around what transition could look like post-surge. Obviously, we have to be post that time before we could transition any non-essential places back into some level of activity. We will organize the right teams of people to advise us, as well as making sure information and thoughts from all of you as we have come together to plan for this moment with closures and restrictions. We will also need to plan at the right time for the transition to a more open community and workplaces and activities. And that is something we will obviously do together, and we will be better off for it when we do so. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Sean Cronin to discuss the municipal legislation as well as the Federal CARES Act and how it pertains to your city or town. Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Jeff, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Sean. Thank you very much.
Okay, good. Okay. So Lieutenant Governor really hit the highlights on the bill the governor signed late last week. Just to touch on a couple, one in particular. So the high school graduation competency waiver was included in the bill, as was the MCAS waiver requirement, along with the extension of the three-year plan filing that was part of the Student Opportunity Act. So those three education-related provisions were included. And then one for regional school districts. So for the mayors and managers whose communities are part of regional school districts, there's a provision there to allow a minimum 1/12 budget to be approved by DESE if the budget can't be approved by June 30. So very similar to the provision in the bill the governor previously filed for towns to be able to basically have a minimum 1/12 budget without town meeting approval. So those were the areas of interest, I think, for mayors and managers in that bill. Briefly on the CARES Act, I know there's a lot of interest in this and there's been a lot of questions about it. But at this time, I think it's safe to say that ANF is still waiting on some guidance from the U.S. Treasury. Once that guidance is received, they'll be able to move forward with the program. But the one thing I will state there is Boston, since they have a population of more than $500,000 population, that they're able to apply directly to the federal government for funding. All the other 350 other municipalities don't apply to the federal government. There'll be a state process. So Boston, I believe, is in the process of preparing for that. And then the last thing I'll mention, and then I'll turn it over and certainly answer any questions during the call, is I know not every community is a member of the GIC, but on April 10th, the GIC did send out information to its member municipalities regarding employees who are on furlough. And in a nutshell, in keeping with DOA's definition, GIC considers employees furloughed due to the pandemic to be GIC benefit eligible, provided that the employee and employer share of premiums continue to be paid. So there's nothing, municipalities don't need to report anything to the GIC. It's something that will just go forward. But it's something I just thought it was worth mentioning for those 30 some odd municipalities that are part of the GIC. So with that, yeah, I'll stop and turn it over. And then if there's any questions now or during the course of the call, I'm certainly here for the duration.
So Lieutenant Governor, is there further updates from any of the other officials who are on, or should we proceed to questions, recognizing we have you for about 15 minutes?
Yeah, we're happy to take questions.
Excellent. So as we normally do on these calls, we do the questions through the chat function. We do our best to get to all of the questions. There is Charlie Seelig, who is, if people take a look at the chat function, and you can type in your question if you have one, and then those questions, if you type it so that everyone can see it, then the question goes to everyone. If you type it just to the panelists see it. I will read those questions and we'll go through. Since Charlie Seelig jumps on and always loads up on the front end, we'll take one of his questions, then go to other people, then go back to Charlie, and then back down. Hope that sounds fair to you.
Jeff, this is Larry Madoff. I just wanted to mention, I'm the medical director of the Bureau of Infectious Disease and Laboratory Sciences at PPH, and I just wanted to mention that I'm on the call and available for questions as well.
Thank you very much, Dr. Madoff. I do see a couple of questions that would be appropriate for you to handle. So when those come up, we're really happy to have you with us.
Doctor, thank you for joining us.
The first
call, thank you.
My pleasure, Lieutenant Governor.
The first question is June 29th or 30th the last day of the waiver period for late payment of bills under Chapter 53 of the Act 2020? Is the interest calculation for late bills paid after the end of the waiver period based on the due date or the end of the waiver period? That sounds like a Sean Cronin question to us.
Yeah, Charlie, send that to me directly and I'll get you the exact answer, but I'm pretty sure it's June 30th. In terms of the second part of the question, I just got to double check, but just send me an email with that exact question. I'll get you an answer today.
Right. I know the question says payments made before June 30th. So that's what the statute says. So we will go to the next question, which is, we are looking to hire retirees. If we do, can they be tested before starting? And if so, where?
It's Dr. Madoff. In general, we recommend testing for symptomatic individuals. So if someone is sick and they have respiratory symptoms, that would be a reason to test them. We wouldn't generally recommend testing asymptomatic individuals because the test doesn't really tell you what could happen to them in the future. They could be, even when they're being tested, they could be in the incubation period for COVID and get sick at any time. And so much more important, we think, is the monitoring of all individuals for fever and for respiratory symptoms. And if people develop those symptoms, they should stay home for more.
Thank you very much. The next one sounds like a question also for you, Dr. Madoff. It says, whenever the stay-at-home and social distancing orders will be partially lifted, group assemblies will likely continue to be prohibited for a significant time frame. What's your advice for planning for such gatherings in light of town meetings in June? Should we realistically plan for later gatherings of large numbers of people?
Thank you for that question. I have to say that's a very difficult question. Predictions are very hard to make. I think that that's something that all of us, certainly at DPH and throughout state government, are grappling with that question, is how do we re-enter into activities and keep ourselves safe in the future. And I don't think we've come to an answer to that question. I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to be unable to answer that.
So the stay-at-home advisory in place through May 4th does outline that we need to restrict activities for people to go to essential workplaces, groceries, pharmacies, the things that you need to sustain your life, your family. It also does restrict gatherings to under 10, so long as appropriate social distancing can be put in place. And if you do go to out of the home, the social distancing can't be accomplished. That's the covering of your face. That all stays in place until May 4th. And further, if that's what our orders define, can't stress that enough, because we are in what we have described as the eye of the storm, or in this surge time, or approaching surge time, and really important that we continue to adhere to social distancing to reduce further spread. We will continue to monitor the numbers. We will continue to advise you and make decisions. And we will be doing this with enough time, hopefully before May 4th, so you can, as municipal leaders and school leaders, make decisions accordingly.
Thank you. And we have a couple of other questions, Lieutenant Governor, that that also fall in that category, including guidance on Memorial Day ceremonies and whether or not that there's anything from the state. But I take it that you would say that that and similar questions have essentially the same answer, constantly being reviewed and updated as the circumstances and the data indicate.
That's correct. What I just defined would also apply to these gatherings, as hard as that is, and as heartbreaking as it is for all of us to think about a beautiful moment and an important moment when we need to honor those who have served and sacrificed. And it's certainly something that I know the governor and look forward to doing with everyone that we come together with at that time. Our activities that have to be looked upon with that in mind. Now, our guidance is in place through May 4th. May 31st, we might be in a different place. It's just too soon for me to say at this moment where exactly we will be in terms of our orders as of May 31st.
Thank you. Here's a question regarding whether the Commonwealth will publish all of the presentations and written materials that were referenced by the economists in today's virtual economic roundtable. I can just say that the MMA will be publishing all the material that is available on our website so that you can just go to mma.org to the COVID-19 site and also our news stories, and you'll be able to get those copies of those economic presentations regarding the effect of COVID-19 on our economy. Another question is, how is the state approaching enforcement of drivers from other states entering Massachusetts?
There is no like border patrol or system where we are pulling people over because they have an out-of-state plate. No, that is not something that is in place here. But what we have done is define what is essential and what is not. And I think people on this call are familiar with that list and the FAQ that does complement that list to further define and provide guidance and instruction for people to understand what it means if they are in a category where it's unclear to them whether they are essential or not. That has reduced a lot of activity in and out of the Commonwealth. The airlines have just naturally restricted. Logan is down 90%. JetBlue suspended service at Worcester and Providence. So the traffic, air traffic coming in and out of our Commonwealth is just naturally reduced. But then again, there's, you know, commercial activity that is taking place to ship and move goods from one place to another, which is part of our essential economy. Yet at the same time, things like recreational cannabis stores are non-essential. And one of the reasons we left them there, despite some calls for us to do so, to open them, was that they oftentimes attract people from outside of the Commonwealth to come to those stores because there aren't that many of them. And there aren't any others in the abutting states. So the order is defined pretty clearly with specific guidance, and we have a stay-at-home advisory that accompanies that. That is all remains in place.
Thank you. We have a question regarding the grocery store employees access to PPE and whether there is a plan to provide masks and gloves with more effective cover than a cloth face mask, for example, to grocery store or essential retailers. Is that something that is being planned?
What we have provided to grocers is PPH guidance.
I don't know if Dr. Madoff could expand on this, but guidance around safety protocols for workers with grocery stores. So in some places you see the plastic shields at the registers. The workers are all wearing a covering that is for the guidance that we issued. And we have asked for people leaving their homes and going to grocery stores to also cover their faces when they can't be 6 foot distance from other people within the store. And there are some other details on the guidance, but in terms of what we've now come to know as the medical masks, the N95 masks, it's really important that those masks are available for frontline healthcare workers in hospitals and those providing medical treatments. And at the grocery store, the face coverings can be made in different configurations that can work to safeguard them the course of their job performance. Dr. Madoff, do you have anything further you'd like to add?
No, Lieutenant, I think you covered that actually quite precisely.
Thank you. There's a question about if there's a timeline when we can expect to hear about the decision on schools and the March 4th date for schools.
That is something that the governor, secretary, and the commissioner are discussing. We recently provided guidance around April school vacation week, and that gave you, as school districts and municipal leaders, some ideas around how to use that time, whether to work remotely through it or use it as vacation time and tack on that those days at the end of the school year. We are working on guidance regarding May 4th, and we will have that to you.
Thank you. We have a question regarding whether or not there's a plan to establish another testing location for emergency responders in the Western Mass Hill towns, since having a location in Springfield is still not an easy access for many of the rural communities.
I guess I would ask the caller to provide us some additional information in terms of the testing need. For instance, if it's a nursing home, we have access to mobile testing. But that certainly can be available to the community for that purpose. There is a process for getting that to you to satisfy that need. If it is a different need outside of a nursing home, and there is also a challenge with accessing the big site, we'd like to work through that with you. We obviously want to make this available. We want to make it accessible, and it has to be convenient. Otherwise, if the testing doesn't get done, that's not a good place. So if you could provide your information to Jeff, Jeff will send that to our office, and we will follow up directly with you.
Thank you. I have the question here, and we will forward it to your office. Thank you very much. Another question has to do with public records requests. There is a, areas are being inundated with them, and it's extremely difficult to respond in following the statutory deadline, given the lack of resources and the fact that town halls are closed.
This is Elizabeth Denniston. We definitely understand that concern. We at the state level are encountering the same issues. The public records law does continue to be in effect, and we just ask you to do your best to try to communicate with the requester to allow for more time and to work through it. But we definitely understand that concern.
Here's a question for Tom Mangan. Has a regional location been set up for positive homeless or assisted living residences, or should they be stay quarantined in their current facilities? I'm going to unmute you, Tom, if I can. Here we go.
Sorry, I was muted. So we are working to set up regional isolation and recovery centers for homeless individuals that are tested positive or are deemed by a clinician to be have COVID. On the assisted living front, the Executive Office of Elder Affairs is working closely with the assisted living facilities, and you might have seen that mobile testing is now really being expanded to include assisted living residences. And as the Lieutenant Governor mentioned earlier, there's an intake line to set up mobile testing.
Thank you. There's a question regarding whether or not the state is developing a plan to help communities make up for lost revenue as a result of the crisis. Communities are losing a lot of local revenues, hotel, meals tax, other revenues, and whether any of the aid packages or relief or budget plans are contemplating helping those communities that will be struggling mightily with the revenue gap.
Yeah, this is Sean. I think part of the answer goes back to what I said before, that Executive Office of Administration Finance is still working with the U.S. Treasury on developing the program for the $150 billion nationwide state and local part as part of the CARES Act. But the one thing I will note is that it's clear that that program is not for revenue loss. It's for expenditures associated with the pandemic during a certain time frame, I believe March 1 to the end of the calendar year, and for expenses that had not been budgeted. So I think the short answer is the federal money cannot go toward revenue loss.
And Sean, I'll just take the advantage of having the microphone to just share with everyone that the MMA is working closely with our counterparts nationally and with the state groups like the MMA that represent communities all across the country to call on the federal government to pass a stimulus for and separate legislation that would provide for stabilization funds to not just the state, but directly to cities and towns to be able to make up for lost revenue and preserve essential services during the coming recession. So there's a federal role to play in order to provide revenues, because the CARES Act is essentially for unbudgeted COVID-19 related expenses and not for revenue loss. I will go back and take Lieutenant Governor, I think that we have to, you have your appointment in the briefing, so I think this is the point when you have to drop off, is that correct?
I would like to just add to that. We at the state level are also assessing our revenue stream
as you are at the municipal level. So we all know that this is having a significant impact for budgeting purposes. It's very, very, very uncertain. It's difficult to plan with these conditions. So thank you for your efforts in advocating for federal dollars. We will work in partnership with you as we sort out our budget, which will then obviously have an impact on the final budget. And we will all work through this together.
Thank you very much, Governor. We'll make sure that while we listen to the remaining questions and field those questions, we're also going to make sure that we can tune in to watch your briefing to the citizens of the Commonwealth at 2 o'clock. Thank you very much for joining us for your weekly briefing. We appreciate it deeply.
Okay, and we look forward to our next one, but in between time, we will address the questions that I've heard, as well as those that might come up after I get off and those that come up after the call. This is a team effort, as we all know, and thank you all for what you're doing every single day. Be safe.
Thank you. We have a couple of questions that look like Sean Cronin would take them. One is, will the Department of Revenue, DLS, be able to certify new growth by year end on its regular schedule so we can rely on this to plan FY21 budgets?
Yeah. Great question. I think the answer really depends on when communities will be able to have assessing staff or contractors, get back out in the field and do what they need to do. We have had conversations with local assessors and firms that provide services for communities. And I know they're doing a fair amount of work remotely. So in the number of communities that do contract out for that type of work, at least the vendors feel good that they'll be able to get what needs to get done on their end. On our end, again, depending upon when we start getting the information in from communities, that will go a long way to answering the question. But I will say this, if it gets to a point where we believe that the signs indicate it's going to be a problem to get either new growth certified or properties, property valuations approved, which, you need to have before you get the tax rate set, that we would want to talk about a legislative fix. But I'm not sure we're going to end up there. But as long as communities will be able to get to us what they need to, I feel pretty confident that the DLS team will be able to turn that around.
Thank you, Sean. Here's another question. It sounds similar to the one asked previously. In regards to the option to waive interest and penalties on fourth quarter real estate taxes to June 30th, what happens to the bills paid, say, on June 10th? Does the interest revert back to June 1 or June 30th?
Again, I believe the answer is that the due date is June 30th, and that's when when it should be calculated. But I should have prefaced this with, we are very close to sending out an FAQ because we keep getting through our COVID-19 DLS email box very similar questions. So we're in the process of developing an FAQ that will handle a lot of these, really technical type questions. But if whoever asks the question wants to email that specifically to me, I'll get an answer. But hopefully within another day or so, we'll post and blast out something about a set of FAQs that really get into the weeds and the technical issues associated with some of these questions.
Excellent. Thank you. And the MMA will, as always, we post your information since it is so helpful as well. I am scrolling back now to some of the earlier Charlie Seelig questions. Charlie, sorry to give you a starring role. Is is there a list posted on the state's website of hotels and motels accepting first responders who either need quarters to avoid being exposed to family members or need to be quarantined themselves? This may be a question for Tom or Larry.
Sure. So this is Tom. I'll take that. So there isn't currently a list on the state's website. We've been working with municipalities and groups of municipalities, as well as nonprofits who are interested in setting up these types of housing to provide them with, you know, technical support in terms of maximizing FEMA reimbursement and technical support on how those sites, best practices on how those sites should be operated. And I'd be happy to connect anybody who's interested in doing that with the right people.
And so how do people connect with you so that you could help connect them?
Sure. So what I'll do is I will, Jeff, I will send you my contact information and I would be happy for you to send it out to the group.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much. That will be, we'll have that posted in our wrap-ups about this call. So thanks very much, Tom. Sean, a question for you. This may be our final question, unless there are more that come in. What will be the process of assessment to member communities in a regional school district if the member communities are unable to have a town meeting before June 30th? How will the assessments be based? What kind of process do you envision?
I'm gonna have to punt to Desi on that, because that's really their wheelhouse. So if somebody wants to get me that question, I can check with Jay Sullivan and folks over at DESE as to what they see the process being.
Okay, we will forward. We know that that especially on those kinds of questions regarding regional schools, that there needs to be a sort of a rhythm and a resonance between DLS and DESE, and we know this is an area that there are a lot of issues in the weeds that need to be worked out. So I want to thank everyone for participating. Certainly the Lieutenant Governor and all of the agency officials, the key officials who provided responses today. We have covered all of the subject areas for the questions. A reminder is that all of the material on the economic outlook for Massachusetts, it was presented at the State House virtual hearing today, will be posted on the MMA website for people to access as that information becomes available, both the reports that are published and made available to the public, but also a summary of what was shared with state officials as we take a look at the state's economic and budget prospects for weathering another unpleasant aspect of the COVID-19 crisis as it's hitting Massachusetts and our nation and our world. I want to say thank you to Lieutenant Governor, to Sean, to Tom, to Larry, to Elizabeth for participating in today's session. And we look forward to having you all join us in 1 week, next Tuesday at 1 o'clock for the fifth weekly briefing by the administration for municipal chief executive officers. And in the meantime, the MMA expresses our deep appreciation to all the local officials who are out on the front lines protecting our citizens from the virus and protecting our future by making sure that we're prepared to deal with all of the issues that will allow for a strong and robust recovery. So I want to thank you all. The MMA will be posting an audio recording of this, a summary article of this webinar as well. And we will be sharing the specific questions with the agency officials and helping to make those public and distributed to communities as well. So thank you all very much, and we appreciate your leadership. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Bye-bye.